From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There were all kinds of traditions and rituals that fell by the wayside as America's indigenous cultures were integrated with white culture. Among them, a more nuanced sense of gender identity in Native life. Some tribes in North America have creation stories that give humans multiple genders, in some cases up to 9. The Navajo have 4. Fred Martinez was a Navajo teenager who saw himself as a two-spirit. He often dressed and acted like a girl. Growing up in a rural community in Colorado, many in his family and community didn't understand or accept him. He was bullied and harassed and 10 years ago brutally murdered in a hate crime. Today in the program, we're talking about Fred Martinez. He's the subject of a documentary film that filters his story through the traditional and historical concepts of gender. The film is called Two Spirits. After the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Fred Martinez knew he was different. Like most gay or transgendered teenagers, he had his moments of confusion and doubt. Growing up in a rural community where he often dressed like a girl may have complicated things, but there was also a part of Fred that seemed to understand who he was. Some part of him accepted who he was. It may have had something to do with a cultural tradition deeply embedded in his life as a Navajo teenager. Martinez saw himself as a two-spirit. It's a figure in traditional Navajo culture of a person with a male body but a female nature. In another time, a two-spirit would have been revered in a community, but Martinez was constantly harassed and bullied, and he was brutally murdered 10 years ago. Today in the program, we're profiling a documentary that tells Fred's story and explores the traditional concepts of gender. It's called Two Spirits, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Lydia Nibley is joining us. She directed and co-wrote the documentary film Two Spirits, which we should say aired earlier this year as part of the Independent Lens series on PBS stations around the country. You can get a copy of the DVD or stream it on iTunes, and we'll give you all of those details a little bit later on the program. But Lydia Nibley, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Doug.
When did you first hear about Fred Martinez?
We heard about what had happened in the aftermath of the murder from a friend who was an activist and family friend in Cortez, Colorado. And he's one of the key people who wanted to make certain that things that unfolded after Fred's murder in Cortez would be very different than what had happened in Laramie, Wyoming, about a year earlier with the murder of Matthew Shepard.
Different in what way? You mean just that more attention would be paid to this, that the investigation would be more careful and there would be sensitivity sort of applied, right?
Sensitivity in media is a very important issue because how people are described is very important, and how they're treated with respect and handled properly, that was a big concern. They also wanted to make sure that the murder was investigated thoroughly. There are a number of unsolved two-spirit murders in Albuquerque, for instance. And so it's very easy for people of color, people who are poor, people who are expressing gender in a way that is challenging to the culture at large, to be diminished or demeaned or overlooked.
So you heard the story, but when did it become a documentary? When did you think of it as something you wanted to yourself explore?
I saw a photograph of Fred that was taken. This is just, both tragic and inspiring to me, that a photograph of Fred with his arms upstretched to the sun, his face exposed, sort of half in shadow, half in light, where you just have the absolute sense of who this human being is at 16, his bigness, his charisma, his soul is so present in that photograph. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, I can see how this story can be a film and that the film can be an entry point for people to understand things they might not otherwise approach. The tragedy of that photograph is that and it's in the film and it's on the website, but it was taken just a few weeks before he was murdered, and the spot where he was photographed is just a few feet from the place he was killed.
And that, but what about it, though, Lydia? I mean, it's just that it was the contrast, of course. But this made you embark on what? Wanting to know who he was. Is that right?
Absolutely. And to see how the potential of who he could be was completely snuffed out.
That's a big part
out.
Of the film, this idea of a potential, right?
Well, and what's lost? What's lost when people culturally are taken away from things that would give them identity and pride and a sense of who they are? As you said, Fred identified as both a boy and a girl. Yeah. And he told his mother, I don't want to choose to be one or the other, which was kind of the message he was getting from popular culture. And she said, oh, you don't have to. There's a word in Navajo, nadle, third gender. There's a place for you in our culture. She didn't know much beyond that, but she did know that, so she could give him a name.
So interesting, and we'll talk about this as we go. There is that kind of remnant in the back of his mind. And I'm wondering if you think that did help him sort of – he wasn't defiant, but he did have a kind of self-satisfaction about who he was. And I wonder if you think there's something – whether or not he could completely understand it that was embedded in his culture and it was embedded in who he was that helped him sort of deal with it.
I see that. And – you know, there's an example that's not in the film, but I love it, of a young man who comes out to his Christianized, Westernized family and is practically thrown out of the house, you know, just suffers horrendously from the people he loves most, and comes out to his traditional grandmother, and she smiles and says, oh, my friends will be so jealous. So if you can imagine the medicine that provides to people at the level of their soul when they're seen and understood for being who they are, I think Fred did have that from his mother. He didn't have that from his extended family. His brother stood firmly with him. His father stood firmly with him. But other members of the family told Paula, get your son in line. He's embarrassing us. And she said, no, he's not. This is who he is, and he's beautiful, and he can be who he is, and it will be good for all of us.
Let's talk, as you do in the film, with the Navajo creation story, because it gives this kind of expression or this kind of persona to this idea of gender identity. Take us through that, if you would. It's the story. It's in the fifth world where man and women are created, and then they're given these gender identities. But it's so much more complicated than, say, the Christian creation story where you're a man or you're a woman. Talk about that, if you would.
Yes, Adam and Eve have possibly given us a disservice in binary gender when the human family doesn't really seem to be born to reflect that. There's intersex. There are people who are born with different brains, different body chemistry, different expressions of who they are. That's the reality of how the human family comes into the world. Pushing them into a binary of male and female, one or the other, is the thing that is brutal and harmful to a lot of people and that cheats the rest of us from what they could offer. But Navajo cosmology is so rich. The hero twins have hermaphroditic properties. Mm-hmm. A trickster figure who is moving this gender discussion along. One of my favorite stories is of a time when men and women got so fed up with each other that they completely separated. They would have nothing to do with each other. I'm sure you've been there in your life from time to time. I have in mine. You just say, that's enough. I've had it with you. And it was the creation of these other genders in the middle, Nadle people who could mediate and help bring people together again so that we could have babies be born and progress move on. We need that intersection. So the holy role of Nadle and Delba people, Delba is the female-bodied person who has a masculine nature. Yeah. Those sacred roles provide masculine-feminine balance, which is the most prized element of Navajo spiritual belief and practice, is that there has to be a balance between the masculine and feminine for an individual to be healthy, for a family to be healthy, for a community to be healthy, for the world, the literal physical genderized world of mountains and streams that are masculine or feminine, and how that balance makes everything work.
How does balance – I mean, you could see it as this kind of quaint, you know, superstition – balance, this idea of balance somehow. How do you see it expressing itself?
Or the most important idea of the 21st century.
Well, precisely. but that's what I'm saying. I mean, how do you see it reflected in what you see every day? This idea of balance, that we don't have a concept of balance. I mean, do you see that idea kind of missing?
Well, even in the Western tradition in Jungian thinking and in a lot of spiritual practice, that Western people are more familiar with than they are with Native American belief.
Sure.
The journey to maturation, to be a whole, healthy human being, will involve, for many people, a balancing of the masculine and the feminine, an embracing of the other in yourself as a heterosexual person. So, you know, as a heterosexual minority, there's an idea that to become a mature and whole person, you have to get there. So if we go back to these traditions, these traditional American values, where people who possess these characteristics have a head start, in a sense. They can mediate between couples. They're good matchmakers. They are good medicine people. They can perform sacred ceremonies and in either role. There's a lot they offer a community.
Okay. Tell us about Fred, if you would. Who he was. I mean, he, as a young kid, there's a time when he wants to be like his dad, who's a kind of a cowboy, works for the railroad, wants that part of him. But then there's the other part of him, of course, that wants to borrow his mother's purse and her makeup. Talk about who he was.
He was a traditional Navajo person who loved his traditional Navajo culture. He also embraced the Native American church, a pan-Indian religion. He was also Christian. He was also many things. So some days he liked to call himself Beyonce, sometimes Frederica. Most of the time he was Fred, and he identified himself at 16 as a gay man. So that's how we refer to him, because you always let people tell you how they want to be addressed. You don't impose your ideas onto them. So he was mostly Fred and he. So that's what we do in the film. But very fluid in terms of his gender expression. And who he was when he walked into a room as this very tall, very beautiful Navajo boy, heads would turn and people would say, "Who's that gorgeous Navajo girl?" You know, he was so big as a presence.
Extroverted?
Very. Made friends in a millisecond everywhere. Would give you the shirt off his back, the shoes off his feet, literally.
This idea of in the piece you talk about how he was easy to hug, to offer comfort. And I keep going back to that idea, that role of the Two-Spirit as sort of someone who offers that reconciliation and who can bring people together. That it was like it was natural to him in some way.
Completely. And he tuned into everyone's moods. He would walk into the classroom after a weekend and immediately sense who had had a hard time and spend time with him. His teachers in the alternative high school where he landed after he was hounded out of public school adored him. And they were amazed at his compassion and his ability to connect with people. And his mother said he would just literally walk into any situation and make friends with total strangers who had nothing in common with. They would just be in love with him 10 minutes later.
It's interesting, the story when he sort of officially comes out, and it's told by Pauline Mitchell. Let's say something about Pauline first. She's an extraordinary character as well, kind of like as a filmmaker, you really lucked out with a character like that. Do you know what I mean? I mean, she's like really...
She's actually very, very shy.
Is she?
She's very shy. She gave that openness as a gift to the world, and it was not easily given. I mean, what you see in the film of her emotional range and her willingness to bare her soul and her emotions and her grief was a very hard thing for her to do, and I applaud her for it. She was amazing.
I hope this isn't a stereotype that I'm contributing to, but having interviewed Native American people in the past, many are reticent, many are reluctant in many ways. They're not expressive in the way that some are. Was it difficult at first to your conversations with her, or was this a gift she was giving to her son in some ways?
Absolutely. She acted far out of her comfort zone to do something very special and share with the world. I think as a documentary filmmaker, you're asking people to do the equivalent in terms of story of giving bone marrow.
Yeah.
You're saying, do this hard thing that will help other people. And that's what she did.
Let me play a clip from the film. This is the moment when Pauline Mitchell is talking about Fred, essentially, which is kind of extraordinary, getting the family together to have this, let's have a meeting.
His older brothers and his parents, yes, he calls the meeting.
Here's a scene from the film Two Spirits.
Well, I want to tell you, all my brothers and my mom, let's all sit down, you know, and that was a big shock. What? Are we having a meeting? I go, and we came in here, and you know, I says, well, everybody spoke, you know, except this and that. And then he says, well, I want to tell you guys, I'm like this. This is how I'm going to be. I don't know how you guys like it. And we all looked at each other, you know. And then his oldest brother, he says, well, I'm just going to tell you to be careful. Take care. Just be careful what you do, what you say. Watch out. Those words that he said meant a lot, you know. And I just thought, and I just sat there, and I just finally, you know, I said, well, friend, I love you, no matter what, you know, no matter how you are, no matter what people say, I'm always going to love you, you know.
But this is a lovely moment, I have to say, in the film. So he got that from his family. As you said, the more extended family, they didn't know what to make of him. But at home, he had that. He did have a comfort. He did have love and acceptance.
A lot of love. Yeah, he was very close to his mother.
Another extraordinary thing in the film is you introduce us to a number of can we call them two spirits?
Yeah.
Yeah. Albert MacLeod, remarkable person. John Parker, Elle Frank.
Isn't she gorgeous?
She's
and amazing.
Amazing and really terrific. Let me ask you about Juan Tio Vicente.
Oh, yes.
In the film, he reveals, I think, in this clip, I want to play this clip, just how confusing it must be for Native American young people because they do have in their past this tradition. It's recognized by some. It's practiced by some. It's interesting how often it comes from their grandparents.
Because they're the most tuned in to the more traditional roles.
Right.
Ask a 110-year-old venerable Navajo grandmother, and she'll tell you all about these roles.
Then it conflicts with the sort of more modern cultures. And in particular, and this is one of the themes in the film, the sort of integration of Native people into Western cultures, particularly Christian cultures. Juan Tio Vicente says in this clip, he talks about how his parents had become evangelical Christians and didn't know what to make of the fact that he was a two-spirit. Here's another clip from the film, Two Spirits.
My sense of being different came very early to me, around age five or so, six, preschool age, when I was being raised by my paternal grandparents, who were traditional Navajos. I have a lot of good memories from that time, which is different than when I came back with my parents, a sense of dread overall. My parents are not traditional Navajos. They are they're actually Christian, evangelical. So they don't hold any traditional beliefs at all. They used to tell me, you know, act like a boy. That's what they used to tell me. And that was a little puzzling to me back then because I was young, eight, and I am a boy, you know. I did not fit their expectations of what, even at that age, what a male should be. And to be told that apparently I'm not being natural, you know, was confusing to me because I was not aware of the term gay or homosexual or any of that, two-spirit or anything of that nature.
Do we know, is that typical in Native cultures, that conflict among the two spirits that you talk to?
Well, many people have known about their tradition and they're fighting to bring them back. So within tribal communities, there are particular groups of people who have never lost touch with their traditions. It's just been more quiet and sacred and discussed behind the scenes. And for those people, they've never lost a sense of who they are. Richard LaFortune is one of those people who just knows who he is and always has.
Yeah.
For other people who don't have a tie to their traditional beliefs, they're really casting about. They don't see themselves reflected in our media culture. They don't see themselves reflected in the westernized version of Native culture that they see. And so I think that's probably one of the reasons why LGBT Native kids commit suicide at such a high rate.
So Juan Tio Vicente's parents, so he's trying to express himself in all kinds of different ways. But one of the things that was important for him was his music.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment in the film which I want to play. I want you to set this up for us, though. Which it's in the context of this idea of of cruelty, I guess, or set this up for us, if you would.
I think when people are afraid and they don't understand the differences, they are capable of an amazing level of cruelty, even of the people with the people they love the most. Montijo was drawn to music at a young age, walked to the library, found a massively outdated book about music composition, read it, had no musical instruments, hand-drew the musical staff with a ruler and a pencil, and spent months composing string quartets, elaborate musical works in his head, and then creating one copy on the page on hand-drawn musical staff.
My parents were very clearly not supportive of my music making. They may have seen it as an attempt by me to be gay. They may have seen my earnest attempts to do something good as rebellion, because they didn't understand it. They used to use my music, as I remember, as sort of a lever, as a leverage. Like if I didn't do well in school, or I didn't do whatever, I remember they used to make me burn my scores, which had a huge effect on me. Because I wrote those. I worked on them. So the physical act of making me destroy something that I worked on was sort of a desperate act on their part to try to get me to conform to whatever their belief sets were.
Was this another typical thing that you've seen? Kind of expression, and then trying to just squelch the expression, whatever it might have been, music or...
You know, kids get thrown out of the house when they come out as being gay. It's just horrendous what people go through.
Lydia Nibley is with us. She directed and co-wrote the documentary film Two Spirits. The film aired earlier this year as part of the Independent Lens series on PBS stations around the country. You can get a DVD of the film, or you can stream it on Amazon or iTunes. We have a link, by the way, to those sites on our website, KUER.org/Radio West. We invite you to join us if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, a true story of a Navajo boy who was also a girl. We're talking about Fred Martinez, a Navajo teenager who lived in the rural community of Cortez, Colorado, often dressed as a girl. Martinez saw himself as a two-spirit, though. It's a traditional figure in Navajo culture of a person with a male body but a female nature. In another time, as we've said, a two-spirit would have been revered in the community, but Martinez was harassed and bullied, murdered 10 years ago. Today in the program, we're profiling a documentary that tells Fred's story, explores the traditional concepts of gender. It's called Two Spirits. Two Spirits aired on the PBS program Independent Lens series several months ago. It's available on DVD. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. But the director, co-writer, co-producer, Lydia Nibley, is joining us here in the studio. I wanted to ask you about... The reaction that you're getting to the film. I mean, what people are saying about it, how people react to it, what they make of it.
It's interesting to see a complete range of response. For Native youth who are two-spirited, it's a revelation. It's the first time they've seen themselves reflected in the popular culture. It's a big deal. They, you know, I get emails and calls and at screenings, tearful hugs saying, I'm no longer suicidal. I know who I am. I have a sense of pride. It's just really tremendous. I got a call from Kathy Renna, who's in the film. She's a tough girl. She called me in tears after a meeting of leaders, LGBT leaders in New York, saying, Lydia, you have no idea. This is an absolute sea change. This is a time when we're going from acceptance and tolerance to celebration and the awareness that we contribute not in spite of who we are, but because of who we are, that what we add to families and communities is important. And so, you know, that's a particular kind of impact. Then when I take it into the lion's den with really conservative people of a religious belief that anyone who is LGB or T is immediately going to hell, it's interesting that this film can move the needle and have them see in a particular human being that they can love and see a mother's love for him, to have a more open-hearted, more open-minded response to the possibility that there is a range of human behavior and belief and expression that really does not harm the rest of us.
Tell us who Wesley Thomas is.
He's the foremost Navajo authority on Navajo third gender. That's what he has studied throughout his career as an anthropologist. He has worked with Navajo language and preservation of culture throughout his career. And he contributes enormously to the film because he is the person in the world who can share that information with us.
There's this story that he tells. I want to play this clip. It seems like his grandmother was kind of, we were talking about this earlier, again, people of another generation, they were kind of that was the way in for Wesley as well.
Yes, he knew who he was and had pride and loved himself from the very beginning because of what his grandmother taught him.
My grandmother pretty much opened the gates for me. For an example, there's a particular ceremony in the summertime where only women are permitted. One time she said to me, "Let's go over there." So we went there and we sat among the elderly women, and it was just completely surrounded by women. I inquired about that later when I was in my late 20s, why she did that. And she basically said, "You were different from the time you were 2 years old or somewhere back then. So you were always different." So with my grandmother's insistence, I began occupying those spaces where only women are generally were given privilege to. She said that to me. "That's who you are, and that's what you were born into. Nobody has the power to derail you from that, not even yourself, because that's a power that's given to you by the holy people."
It's interesting that another element of the film that I wanted you to talk about, this famous two-spirits in the past, Wiwa is one that we've talked about on this program, but it was a basis for a Julie Jensen play. But there were others, Oshtish,
Hastingkla.
Mm-hmm. Talk about them, if you would, because the role they played, I mean, you were mentioning the role that they played, it wasn't just that they gave them something to do. I mean, they were a critical part of these societies.
Yes, and to be fair, we need to also make it clear that not all North American tribes have this tradition.
Sure.
In some, you would be killed for being this way. But most North American tribes have been documented to have a tradition around multiple gender and a different range of sexual expression. And so that's what we're talking about when we talk about these tribal communities who embrace, love, and support people, especially the Navajo, because of this love of the masculine and feminine in balance. It just, you know, you are elevated. Hastingkla is a legendary figure. Nadle, Two-Spirit, who knew more ceremonies than anyone else and had a very important role to play in Navajo culture. And, you know, it's that keeper of the culture. This is interesting, too. Nadle people are not prohibited from acquiring wealth in ways that other people within the Navajo community are encouraged not to. The Nadle are exempt from that. And Wesley found that interesting and couldn't understand it. And then when we talked and he said, "Lydia, how many people are in your immediate family? What is your conception of family?" So I named off a relatively small number of people. I, of course, think of my extended family, but the people that I am most immediately responsible to make sure their life goes well is a relatively small number of people. Wesley, on the other hand, feels responsible personally for 140 people.
Wow.
That's how he defines the family he needs to take care of, make sure they get to college, make sure they have what they need. So that might be a clue about why the Nadle are exempted from the ability to accumulate wealth, the understanding being you will be making a contribution to younger people and older people. You will be providing spiritual guidance. You will be there for people in a powerful way.
There's a clip in the film I want to play. Mark Thompson, explain who he is, if you would.
Mark Thompson is a pioneer in the LGBT spiritual movement. He, with his partner Malcolm Boyd, who is an Episcopal priest, they've been married for years, and Mark has made an incredible contribution to gay letters and as a photographer too, and in documenting gay history. And his exploration of this idea of there is a gay spirituality, that gay people have a spiritual dimension. There's a spirituality to gayness, is something that he's worked for decades to document and to explore.
He says something in this clip, along with Richard LaFortune, whom we'll introduce here in a moment. He's going to join us here in a moment. But this idea that that a two-spirit gives a deeper perspective to a society, that it's not just a static role. It helps a society move along and progress. Here's another moment from Two Spirits.
Isn't it ironic? Here's this group that have been accused of being biological dead-enders, but by being allowed to fully participate in society, we are naturally going to lead it to some new observations and new directions within itself. And thus we make a stronger, healthier, more vibrant culture. Now, this seems to me as plain as the bark on a tree.
There are a lot of different ways that you can be in a position to significantly help people. And it's because of this symbolic standing in the middle, standing exactly in the crossroads of these two places.
By being so open to change and new ideas and new experiences, we're able to embody that and carry that for society as a whole. And that's the only way that any society or any culture of people on a broader basis is going to survive.
You stand in the crossroads of two points of discrimination. It's a dangerous place to be. You stand in the crossroads of two genders, and it can be a gift.
That last voice you heard there was Richard LaFortune. He's an activist and an organizer in Native Two-Spirit communities across the nation and around the world. He's also the founder of Two-Spirit Press Room, which aims to give more voice to Native concerns in the media. And he's joining us today from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Richard LaFortune, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Greetings.
I wanted to ask you... I wanted you to talk a little more about this idea of standing in the middle of discriminations. It's dangerous, but if you stand in the middle of, you know, the other perspective, it's a gift. Say more about that, if you would. Elaborate on that.
Well, one of those intersections has always been here for thousands of years, and the other intersection, which is a more dangerous intersection, is introduced. It's alien. And so from our indigenous perspectives, we have cultures that have always taught that everyone has gifts to bring to the community, and that includes women and elders and children and, you know, who we would call LGBT in American English, you know, the men, the boy, everybody's got something to bring. And it's something that no one else can do. And if you look at the opposing viewpoint, which is that there's a, you know, you can hear it across the airwaves on television, radio, on the internet, a lot of people who believe that there's only one way to be. You can only speak English. You can only a man and a woman can get married. A man can only be a man. You know, these normative values that are slowly ebbing away from Western-based societal concepts basically say that we are wrong simply for existing. And, of course, we were here first, and so we have a different point of view, and ours is older.
Right. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the English language, and I'm wondering how it translates, this idea of two-spirit. I mean, Lydia did her best in the film to express it, to try to sort of convey it. I'm trying to do my best as well. But does it translate very well? Because there's a moment in the film when someone says that, you know, in English, you can't really wrap your head around it exactly. Do you think we fully get it? Is it easy to express?
Well, for your audience members who may or may not be acquainted with Native cultures and history, in 2011, we have approximately 225 Native languages, living Native languages, and they are very different. I think I actually mentioned this in the documentary. Don't I admit, Lydia?
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we've got about 200. Hello, Lydia. It's been a while.
My friend.
So we have 225 languages that remain vital and alive in the United States. There are about 60 in Canada, about 125 in Central America, 300 or 400 in South America. There are 370 million indigenous people worldwide. And we have some of the densest populations of linguistic families and stocks. So if you just take a baseline of some of these 225 languages, and there are terms for, you know, a third gender or middle genders or alternative genders in most of these languages. So, you know, you do the math and you realize that these are, you know, there are 562 federally recognized tribes in this country. And at this hour, about 124 other tribal entities that are suing for federal recognition. So that's, you know, close to 700 tribes that are recognized or attempting to gain federal recognition, 225 languages. That's a lot of different ways that you can say Two-Spirit, although it originates in Algonquin family of dialects, and the actual translation is the word Nij, which is in Algonquin the number 2, numeric 2, and Manido, Manidowag. Manido means spirit. Manidowag is plural. So the teaching basically has to do with the fact that in some people who have a gift, there is not only a masculine expression that they were born with, but also a feminine expression. So it's like there are two spirits there, and actually that's accounted for in some ceremonies.
Which is, I think, you speak of ceremonies. I mean, the point is made, and it startled me a little bit. I guess I should have understood it there. But this idea of two-spirit marriage or same-sex marriage, Lydia, it's not exactly a modern concept.
Yes, and it's also not a concept that Native people want applied. Richard, you do a better job at this than I do, but the concept of people being together because they love each other without something to separate them artificially is hugely a part of what makes these traditions run, that who you are and who you love are natural and make sense and make a contribution.
And I think the other thing is, too, you know, we've had what would be called in, once again, American English, we've had same-sex marriages here for 1,000 years before Europeans showed up. And, you know, so this is a little bit of the recreation of the wheel that we see before us now in the halls of Congress and, you know, in the steps of city halls around the country. But the interesting thing is, you know, these are Western models of codified, institutionalized relationships that do not necessarily reflect the cultural constructions of family and relationships familiar to our historic cultures.
Isn't that deliciously complicated?
It's so complicated.
I love it.
Well, it's great because, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I think you hear the same thing within, for example, like the Anglo-gay community, this idea of, well, we want the right to be married. Many do. For many, that piece of paper is incredibly important. For others, it doesn't necessarily matter what you call it. It is incredibly complicated. And you said it before earlier, Lydia. I think this idea of family, it seemed so simple before, but now, I mean, the further you dig, the more nuanced, the more complicated, the more interesting it becomes.
What I love in Richard and Wesley and in these explorations of how we're thinking about these things is that it's a really honest representation of who people actually are. There's less brutality imposed on the human psyche and the human spirit when we recognize the true diversity, the multifaceted quality, the as Richard has said, the unique contribution people make. And Wesley says in the film, you know, we judge people by how they treat their elders, how they treat children, things that matter, you know, these measures of someone's morality that are being imposed on a lot of people in this culture seem quite ridiculous when you think of what it really means to be a good human being.
Albert MacLeod in the film talks about this tradition that survived the Christian experience where parents were not supposed to intervene. You were referring, Lydia, to this earlier. You know, they weren't supposed to impose their expectation or their belief on what a child was going to be. You had to sort of naturally see what the child would become.
As a parent, doesn't that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And Richard LaFortune, you tell this great story about this young person, young mother rushing in to talk to a priest about what she'd just discovered about her son. I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling that story to us.
Well, it's a great story. And I actually met the priest in the story after the fact.
Wow.
Because in the desert southwest, one of the tribes there had a Catholic mission, and there was a young priest there. This takes place quite some number of years ago. A young priest, and of course now they have to have financial degrees and sociology degrees and everything else to go along with their seminary diploma. And so this young guy is there, young priest, and early on, a young mother kind of bursts into his office and she says, "Father, you know, we just discovered that my 13-year-old son is gay." And he immediately went into, you know, kind of panic control mode. And he started thinking, okay, we got to get social services lined up, psychology, you know. And then she finished her sentence and she said, "We have to prepare a celebration feast immediately."
That's such a telling story. So you talked to the priest after. What did he make of that?
I ran into him about, I would say, 2 or 3 years later at a national, I think it was like a national AIDS conference or something like that. And there were, you know, a couple thousand people at that conference, and we were doing some work on prevention services and things like that for indigenous communities. And all of a sudden, this guy comes up to me, and he somehow knew who I was, and we started talking. And he said he was from, you know, such and such a community, and I forget where it was, Texas or Arizona or something. And I said, "You're the guy in that story." And he said, "Yeah."
Isn't it great how when we gather around the fire to tell stories, these abstract concepts that divide us somehow melt away when it's one person telling about the thing that happened.
Lydia Nibley is with us. She directed and co-wrote the documentary film Two Spirits. Richard LaFortune featured in the film. He's an activist and an organizer, founder of the Two Spirit Press Room. You can find links to the film on our website at KUER.org/Radio West. We need to take another brief break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are profiling the documentary film Two Spirits. Lydia Nibley directed, co-produced, co-wrote the documentary film, which aired on the Independent Lens series on public radio, public television stations around the country. There's a DVD available. You can get it or stream it. We'll give you the links to those websites on our website, KUER.org/Radio West. Richard LaFortune is featured in the film. He's an activist and an organizer, founder of the Two-Spirit Press Room. He's joining us today from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Richard LaFortune, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that the you sort of went down that litany of all those languages that are still out there that have words that make up the idea of a two-spirit concept. But, of course, there's always a concern within Native communities about languages going away, being acclimated into, you know, the English language or the white culture. What is happening, do you think? You must worry about that and the two-spirit concept. Is that sort of disintegrating, falling away from Native culture?
Well, I'll tell you that 20 years ago, that's the reason we started organizing, because it was not very well known. It was underground. It was one of those things that part of the legacy of the boarding school history. You know, people were getting the languages, the culture, the cultural and spiritual memory rubbed out of them. Excuse me, by the 1920s, I should say by the teens, they were processing, and I use the word processing, like industrial processing, 23,000 Native children a year in 38 federally run boarding schools, with the complicity of the denominations that were making quite a bit of profit, thank you very much, running these schools. And one of the things that was addressed, I think Lydia mentioned it a little earlier on in the broadcast, and you know, kids would go in with their traditional clothes, their long hair, you know, long hair for the boys or whatever, and they would first thing, you know, cut the hair of the kids and try and make them into Western, you know, images of Western gender systems.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the time, you know, the 1970s, 1980s, well after the boarding schools had disappeared, there was probably a lot of people who still spoke the languages, probably, I would say, 50 to 60% of people above the, up to the age of 55. Now we have fewer. There are endangered languages, which is the majority now, unfortunately, but there's also a language revitalization going on. And by the 1970s and 1980s, when we began actively organizing, a lot of this information was news to us because it was being protected by the medicine people, by the elders, by people who still found our presence in the community to be important, and they found ways to acknowledge and, you know, make us feel recognized and useful and loved, but it wasn't necessarily talked about. Hmm. We had lost, you know, the library at Alexandria, that it almost went up in flames. And so we started gathering the elders and the medicine people together and said, please teach us. And they did. They started sharing what they knew. It happened at approximately the same time that many Western anthropologists, I should say, began looking into this with a great deal of curiosity, because Lewis and Clark came across the Berdashes. You know, that's a verboten word now, but they came across what they called Berdashes during you know, the trip west, and so it was not a new concept, but it was buried. It was hidden within our Native communities in the oral history, and it was kind of carefully buried in the Western scientific literature as well. So how were we, you know, supposed to know? We were fortunate and blessed to have people appear who helped us collectively remember, and from the early 1980s up until today, approximately 30 years, I would say, of nonstop work, we have managed to assemble a great body of our own oral histories, which are not necessarily accessible to Western science. Western science has been busy from the anthropological end, kind of piecing together history. that we may or may not agree with. Western science, health sciences, have been working diligently with our communities and anthropology for things like, you know, prevention models for public health programs and things like that.
Yeah.
So rather than saying that it's in danger of disappearing, it is transforming, which is, you know, one of the key words, I think, related to our identities.
And Wesley reported from the last winter ceremony, multi-day sacred Navajo ceremony, that he had never seen as many Nadle people participating. So he was very excited, and there's a lot of excitement on the reservation, too.
Let me bring this back around to Fred Martinez, if we could, as you do in the film. I'm not sure if we have time to play a clip. Let me try a clip from Mark Thompson, who talks about, and this is a theme, Lydia, that we mentioned earlier, the potential, really, for of Fred Martinez. Here's Mark Thompson from the film Two Spirits.
Fred's life, brief life, is so interesting because it was very clear that he had a high degree of self-acceptance about who he was and that he was one of those in-between people who could accept his, and balance and integrate his masculinity with the femininity. And if he had lived a little bit longer and grown up to be into his 20s or 30s, I have a feeling he would have ended up to be somebody that people would have come to for counseling, for advice, for direction, for nurturing, for spiritual direction. This has been the traditional role of two-spirit people and of many queer people.
Mark Thompson from the film Two Spirits. Lydia Nibley directed, co-produced, co-wrote the documentary, joined us here in the studio. Lydia, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Richard LaFortune, an activist and organizer, founder of the Two Spirit Press Room, joined us from Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Richard, cheers to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We should say Two Spirits aired earlier this year as part of the Independent Lens series on PBS stations, but you can still stream it online or get a DVD, and we'll connect you to those websites on ours at KUER.org/Radio West. Radio West is a production of KUER News. We have technical direction from Mike Anderson, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.